The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text in at 334-784-1067. The boys are bringing you all the action on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. When it comes to the Tigers, the SEC, and the hottest topics in sports, this is where you want to be.
What were Auburn's top five wins in 2025 and 2026? It's Wednesday, and you're on the line.
Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, straight from the ESPN 106.7 studio, here's Kristen Griffin and Tripp Upton.
Welcome in. It is the Wednesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. Appreciate everybody for being here with us. I'm Christian Griffin here with you in the studio. And again, happy Wednesday. A very warm above 90s. Feels like that's just the daily routine now here in Auburn, Alabama. July 8th. Gosh, it feels like I said it yesterday. I said it on Monday again. The fact that we're already more than a week into July feels criminal. It feels like we just got the summer started, but right in the middle of all of the dog days of summer. And so list season continues, talking season continues, ranking season continues all throughout the sports media side of things. And that'll be a little bit of what today consists of as well. Funny enough, I got to use just about the same intro yesterday as I did today, because yesterday was one of the most fun shows we've had in quite some time, especially in terms of just overall engagement, because of the rule changes, the ones that we love, the ones that we don't. That was talked about for over an hour yesterday, and had three or four phone calls, had dozens and dozens of text messages as well that we were able to literally dive into, talk about the pros, talk about the cons, and had a whole lot of fun. And that's the perfect definition of talking season, the perfect definition of what today is going to feel like as well. I mentioned it. I'm Christian Griffin here with you in the studio. Across from me is my man Tripp Upton. Happy Wednesday, my dudes. It's officially hump day, and hopefully all is well.
Yes, all is well. Just another beautiful day outside in Auburn, Alabama. Was trying to, like, for some reason, once I kind of getting ready for the show, like in the, I'd say 12:30 to 1:30, I just will, like, walk around the parking lot in terms of just, like, because it's so nice outside, I can't just sit in the studio or sit in the office and just kind of, okay, do I need to get something ready? Do I need to pretend to look busy? No, I'll just gotta go walk around. I need to get like a football or something, and maybe get Brandon to stay late one day and throw with me, and if we need to. But of course, with football season fast approaching, we're gonna have to be get ready to go for not only on the Auburn High Sports Network, Lee Scott Sports Network, but as well as getting ready to talk about everything going on with Auburn. But a great Wednesday for myself. How are you doing?
Yeah, doing well. You just need to get like a little batting cage out there.
Sure.
Or one of the...
I'm sure our head man, Steve Witten, would love to expense that and have that out there.
Yeah, have that right over there by the shed in the woods. You can get a little awning, get a little gazebo. I'm sure that could be worked its way into the budget.
Sure.
Or get one of the... Oh, gosh. Like the trampoline screens where you throw the ball and it just bounces right back to you.
Yeah, we have a at my house, my brothers used to play lacrosse, and I think we either one of those or have one of those. Maybe I could strap it to the top of my car and bring it down next time I come go home.
Yeah, I think it could easily work out.
Throw a golf sim somewhere in here.
That's what Yeah, boss man Steve, if you're listening, can we empty out that shed and get a golf simulator in there? I mean, Tripp's got to work on that handicap, you know? I mean, it's getting down into single digits, and...
I don't know about that.
that's the way we need to go. That's what we... You cracked the code. You figured it out. You figured it out. We're going to take a pay cut, and every month we're going to invest. How awesome would that be?
That would be sick.
We are diving into some Auburn sports here this afternoon, as we promised we would yesterday, and we got to a little bit of it, but... the first little bit of the rundown is able to stay the exact same here this afternoon as we get to dive into our top five Auburn wins in 2025 and 2026. We have not shared this list, and so it will be very interesting to see if your mind sees it differently than I did in the perspective that you took as well. We'll also talk Brendan Sorsby drama, because it feels like it's part 740 of hearing that name and there being new news. Well, today there is now an inquiry for Cincinnati. Finally, after all of the pointing fingers, all of the blame, somebody a couple of months was finally like, okay, what about Cincinnati, who's been really quietly standing over in the corner, letting Texas Tech, letting Indiana kind of take the headlines of everything? What about the Bearcats? And the NCAA now has taken a little bit of an inquiry, a little bit of an investigation on whether or not Brendan Sorsby made any bets at Cincinnati, and if Cincinnati knew about that when they were doing it, because, again, they knew about the Cincinnati Reds games. And so interesting to see how that will play out. But there is a little bit of news on that side of things. And we're also going to have a basketball conversation here this afternoon. Not only a rankings prediction, according to a man that does not sleep until June, and then also a defensive strategy for Stephen Pearl, getting back to the basics, what that should look like inside Neville Arena. Also some calendar dates for Auburn basketball as well. But the phone lines are completely open here on this Wednesday afternoon. No Jordan Hill, out of town here this afternoon, and is making his way back in town next week, where we will be able to talk with him the week before SEC Media Days, talking about Georgia football, maybe some Georgia basketball news in there as well. But definitely highlighted with the conversations of what to expect from SEC Media Days. I would imagine by that time, by next Wednesday, we will have all of the guests, all of the players that are being invited by their teams that are making their way to Tampa. And so we'll be able to talk about Kirby Smart, the three players as well, next week. And that'll be a big conversation for all of the SEC. How many quarterbacks go? How many running backs go? Are there any defensive guys? And obviously the Auburn guys, once we hear about their names, will be a big talking point as well. But no Jordan Hill here this afternoon, which means the phone lines again are open all afternoon long. You can be a part of it at 334-321-1390 during this topic that we're talking about of the top five wins in 2025 and 2026 for the Auburn Tigers. If there are any that stand out to you that we mention or that we don't mention, if you have a personal anecdote, whatever the case may be, we highly invite you to be a part of the show. And if you can't get to the phone lines, the text box is always open as well at 334-784-1685. Again, 334-784-1010. And partner, you came up with this idea of just talking about, because we've done a lot of the recaps. We did the general outlook. We did kind of just the how successful each sport was. If you had to have which one was the most successful, the least successful, which one's now under the most pressure. And that will obviously be conversations that continue to work its way throughout the season and definitely into football season as well. But going back and kind of just looking at the most fun that we had over 2025 and 2026, what was the overall mentality that you had before we dive into each of our lists, so we can kind of break each of them down?
Like, what you're asking, like what criteria that I made my list with?
So I guess we kept this kind of vague, and I guess it was halfway purposeful, but just so that way we know the criteria. I'll tell you mine. Mine was strictly as a fan. As a watcher, which games did I enjoy the most? I guess some of these are also the games that are the program-building type of wins.
Yeah.
And there's no sarcasm in my list. I don't know if there is for you, but I don't want to jump the gun, but I don't have Auburn Kentucky on there. Is it? It brought Auburn fans happiness knowing that there was going to be change. I did not put that on there as one of the most fun games that I had. I simply took this as a fan, as an Auburn fan, as an Auburn watcher. These were the games that I enjoyed the most.
Interesting. Now, I took a little bit of a different approach, which I think is a good thing. I took more of just like the overall, what it meant to that individual season and the program at large, because some of my games maybe didn't matter now, but mattered at the end of the season, but mattered at the time, or a big win that at the time was like, okay, this is not as impressive, but then at the end of the season was like, oh, it actually was impressive, and kind of just looking at them both in a vacuum as well as with the entire body of work of the season done.
Yeah, that makes based off of that, I have a feeling that there may be a final game of a sport that's in there that is on your list. But again, if anybody else has thoughts on this, has opinions on your top five wins of Auburn, regardless of the big three, regardless of the sport, that you throw into your list as games that you had the most fun watching, or games that you think were the most monumental type of wins for a building block, or whatever the case may be. Again, we kind of took different routes with this, which I don't think is a bad thing whatsoever. We go in 5-1, I'm guessing.
Yes.
With five being most rankings, five is the least, but like the...
Yes.
The lowest on this list of overall enjoyment.
Yeah, let's do that. Do you have any honorable mentions you want to get out of the way first?
Oh, gosh. I guess I
have one. I'll go ahead and go.
I could go honorable mention.
While you think of one, I'm going to go with my honorable mention. I said the series win over Oklahoma, which at the time was was just Auburn taking care of business against the Sooners. It was at home, was able to just coast to a win, and just another SEC weekend series win for the Tigers. And then you look at it with the entire body of work of, oh, that was the defending national champion, came into your ballpark, and you really didn't sweat it at all. That is a really big win when you look in hindsight. I think a lot of that is also because Oklahoma just got so hot after being so average throughout the regular season, at least comparatively to some of their SEC counterparts. But when you defeat the national champion in a series, no matter what sport it is, you do get some bonus cred. At the time, in a vacuum, it didn't really matter as much.
Sure. It was just an SEC win.
Yes.
And that was that in the middle of playing well, or was that kind of the series that started the back half of the stretch that went really well for the Tigers?
I think it was the series that I have to look at the schedule. It was near the end. I think it was one of the last two series at home. It was right before that away gauntlet that Auburn went and dominated.
Mm-hmm.
Like going to Starkville, to College Station. I'm missing one away series that I'm also like Auburn went out and played phenomenal in.
So it was Arkansas, that's right, that you won the series and you lost the middle game, but you went back and won the rubber match. You then got run ruled at home against Jacksonville State, but then you came back, won the series against Kentucky. You then went to Gainesville, that series. You run ruled Samford, and then you came back and you won the series against Oklahoma. That was the Ethan Bingaman three home run game in game three, was it not? The 14-4 game. You only played 8 innings in that one, and again, another one of those series. I want to make sure that I'm talking about that correctly.
Yeah.
Yes, had 7 RBIs in that contest. So that was the Ethan Bingaman game. Gosh, I still think about that 2-1 game where, again, the middle series, that game, and then the 5-4 loss against Kentucky, the 3-2 loss against Arkansas of like, man, you won the series. How close you were to getting a couple of those sweeps. But I like that. I like that as the honorable mention for your top five list. If I had to say one right now, going back and looking at it, and it's wild to me to think that this Auburn basketball team took Houston to the wire and had 3 chances to win in the final 20 seconds but couldn't get up a true shot attempt. How long ago that feels
like. I know.
That was a 73-72 loss in Birmingham for the number one team in the country at the time in the battleground 2K25. But one that happened not long after that was the St. John's game in the Players Era tournament, because you went and you beat Oregon. You then got dominated by Michigan, as just about every single person did throughout the remainder of college basketball.
Yeah.
If you can't tell by who's holding up the trophy. But then you played the 14th-ranked team in St. John's, where Auburn was not really a favorite to win this game. I think, if anything, it was 1.5. Either way, and Auburn played a terrible first 18 minutes, if not more than that. but in the second half, they made the adjustments needed. And I want to pull up the overall box score from this game because, yeah, Auburn was down 9 at half. They were down 39-30, and it felt like one of those football games where, okay, you played terrible. You played about as bad as you could, yet you're only down 9. You're still in this basketball game. Auburn then outscored St. John's 55-35 in the second half to win that one, 85-74. And that was Tahad Pettiford's crazy second half. He had 27. Keyshawn Hall had 20. I believe they had a majority of those in the second half. It was like 20 straight points by the two of those guys. And so I think I'll flow that. Throw that into my honorable mention list, yeah.
Okay. I think that makes a lot of sense right there. What's your number five?
My number five, again, we're diving into our personal list of top five Auburn wins in 2025 and 2026. My number five was Auburn basketball versus Kentucky.
Ooh, okay.
That was the Tahad Pettiford tip-in, I think as we can call it now, because Tahad's still on the roster, so that's how we'll choose to remember it. Is I think Tahad actually postered everybody on Kentucky's roster to go get the tip in, and that was it, because I don't remember anything else that happened any other way. No, Elijah Freeman coming in after Keyshawn Murphy. We asked him post-game about this, and he made the joke of, yeah, he still doesn't know how he missed that layup, because obviously the time trying to rush it a little bit, but it was like the easiest 2 points you'd ever get. But he missed it, but then Elijah Freeman was there for the tip back, and the three-pointer didn't go for Kentucky. Auburn won it, but the dramatics of didn't hit the rim, so no, that was A&M, but the dramatics of just the back and forth that happened in the post game was kind of the reason why this falls into this list, because Mark Pope doesn't usually go into a full-on just hammer the referee speech very often. Head coaches don't do that very often.
Right.
But that was one of the hottest I've ever seen a head coach. And it got to the point of he was walking to the podium, walking to the table, and asked, all right, what do you got? Before he even sat down. Usually he sits down, looks at the papers, and the SID goes, okay, he's going to give an opening statement, and then we'll open it up for questions. He walked in and said, what do you got? And everybody was kind of shocked, and nobody sat there. He said, nothing? All right, cool, I'm getting up. And then finally somebody was like, no, I'll ask. And it was one of the hottest, times I've seen a head coach. And then that was when our good buddy Mike Giddens of the War Report had his camera rolling still when he was walking out of it and was basically telling his assistant coach, but loud enough for everybody to hear, that if you don't find you better not find me, because I did not say a word about those MFers, referring to the referees, even though he clearly indirectly did, and referred to Auburn as they needed that win, the SEC needed to give them that win, and it was a very entertaining press conference, I'll say that.
Yeah, I think that's a good one. I didn't have that one on mine, but I think that the late game dramatics is good. The only reason that this really didn't come to mind for me is because of the, in a vacuum, there was already the concerns. I mean, we talked to Lance Dahl earlier that week, and he was like, the sky is going to fall for whoever loses this team, whether it be the Wildcats, and they ended up stabilizing just enough and to make it to the tournament and win a game. Meanwhile, Auburn continued to fall apart.
You could also say that it wasn't in anybody's top five because of how Auburn all but blew that game. I mean, relatively comfortable until the two-minute mark, which was kind of the trend of falling apart in the late stages of the game. But
yes,
no, that's my number five, Auburn basketball over Kentucky.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to the well with baseball here. And okay. This is kind of a vibes game, but I think that this is so much more in a vacuum. This game was awesome. That Friday night win over Texas, where you come off of a program record game against Georgia Tech, the best non-conference game, midweek game in Auburn baseball history, and followed up with the best ranked SEC matchup weekend series in Auburn history for the time. Mm-hmm. And Texas, everyone knew that this is one of the top teams in the country. They're going, the pitching was there and everything. But Auburn was still a little bit of an unknown. They had lost some games they weren't supposed to lose. They had some teams take them to the wire. And I think there was a lot of question marks with Auburn. They beat Georgia Tech, but the real measuring stick, as everybody knows, is the SEC and who you play in the SEC when it comes to baseball. And I know that they then went on to lose the next two games of the series. I understand that. But that win where Auburn fights back has a like walk-off error because of Texas, the center fielder,
Mr. Aiden Robbins,
misplays the ball. And I've never seen, up until that time, Plainsman Park go that wild. It was the real, Auburn can compete. And I know they ended up losing a close one. They came all the way back and lost it the next day and then got blown out in the rubber match. But Auburn giving them the opportunity to, on the national stage, on that Friday night, to go, we are a team that is serious about what we want to do. I really think that that jump-started the hype train for the Auburn Tigers. And so I had that one at number five because it really it showed Auburn they can compete with the best in baseball.
Yeah, that's so cool that Eric Guevara is seen all over that video of hitting that walk-off single that Aiden Robbins, again, let it go underneath his glove. And he didn't make too many friends that weekend. Robbins had a pretty solid weekend, but after John with the Gettysburg, the back 40, letting the ball go under his glove and letting Eric Guevara round all four bases, because, again, I that's how I'm going to choose to remember it now, even though we may see the other guy in the SEC next year over in Columbia, South Carolina. But
yes.
That was so cool because that was also the start of like all the drone videos that got that Auburn started, and that worked its way throughout the remainder of the season, obviously through the regionals and super regionals as well. But definitely a very, very fun Friday night. I might have that one on my list in there as well. But we'll get to that one here in a moment. We're going to take our first break here this afternoon, continue on with our list of Auburn's top five wins in 2025 and 2026. If you have thoughts on this, if you have your own little list, give us a call, 334-321-1390, or send it in the text box at 334-784-1685. We'll continue on with this conversation when we come back.
From revolution to rockets, from dusty frontiers to city skylines, these are the moments that shaped America. This is the American Minute, presented by Bucks Island. In 1804, two explorers set out to see what was beyond the Mississippi River. Meriwether Lewis and William Clark led a small expedition into the unknown, across mountains, across rivers, across lands no American had mapped. Along the way, they were guided by Sacagawea, a young Native American. Her knowledge helped the explorers survive. After 2 years and thousands of miles, they reached the Pacific Ocean. Their journey revealed the promise of the American frontier. One more moment that shaped the country we call home. This American Minute is presented by Bucks Island, family-owned and operated, serving boaters since 1948. Online at bucksisland.com.
You're on the line with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton. If you want to be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text us at 334-784-1067.
Back here on the line here on ESPN 106.7. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Appreciate everybody for spending some time with us here on this Wednesday afternoon. And we are diving into our list, our individual list of Auburn's top five wins in 2025 and 2026. I took a little bit more of the fan route perspective. Trip took a little bit more of the, not the business side of things, but a little bit more of something like that. It's more of the building block, the program.
If you had to tell the story of each team in Auburn Athletics through the 2025-26 school year, that is what you'd probably do.
I like it. And so Tripp had an honorable mention of the series win over Oklahoma, just because Oklahoma won the national championship. Because of that, I found my honorable mention of Auburn and St. John's in the Players' Era Tournament, the second half, where you felt like, okay, this team maybe figured it out, and you went 2-1 and in Las Vegas and set yourself up for the rest of non-conference play. I think, obviously, the rest of the season was a little bit frustrating. I understand that for everybody it was. For number five, I had Auburn basketball versus Kentucky. The The tip, yes. The moment, yes. But just from the fan perspective and being in media, the press conference was more so enjoyable for me of the differences between Stephen Pearl and Mark Pope. But a very, very fiery press conference brought that one into my list. Trips number five was the Friday night win over Texas, the Bristol Carter single. Man, you couldn't say that five times fast if you tried. The Bristol Carter single over right over second base, went under the glove of Aiden Robbins, and he technically rounded all four bases, even though he didn't need to because he was the second winning run. But while we have a minute, we can go ahead and dive into one more before the music kicks us out of here. And I'm going to take you back to August of 2025. I'm going to take you back to the 29th in McLean Stadium, one that we were able to talk about here on the show for quite some time, and how, man, you just felt that Auburn was the better team. You felt that, man, if Auburn simplified everything, there is no way that the Tigers wouldn't take care of business. It was a blackout, a very rowdy Friday night to get the season started. It got moved from Saturday to Friday, and that's Auburn-Baylor. 38-24, and I don't know about you, but I thought that this was the start.
Same. I also have this as my number four. So
do you really?
Yes, I do. Yeah, and you know the vibes.
Glad you have this on your program builder.
Yeah, well, I think it was more of the fact that it's never easy to win on the road, and you have to have football somewhere. And I'm not going to pick Mercer. I'm not going to pick Ball State. I'm not going to pick South Alabama. Sure, I could go Arkansas, but by then everyone knew that Freeze was just a legitimate bad quarter away from getting rid of that game, and that was not a pretty game at all.
Was that five turnovers on the second half where you kicked field goals on every one of them?
Something like that. But Baylor was a game that, even at your worst, you prove the SEC is better than the Big 12, and it gives me a lot of hope that Auburn improved so much from last year to this year in quote-unquote Jordan Hare North in Mercedes-Benz. That is going to be I think that game mattered a little bit more.
Just looking at this, man. Arnold ran for 137. He ran for 307. You ran it 52 times. The Rayshon Pleasant kick return.
Yeah.
I thought that Freeze had learned his lesson. I thought that it was, okay, he wants to throw the ball, but he realizes that running works too. We saw how that worked out. We'll continue this list when we return.
You're on the line, and we're just 30 minutes in. Now back to the studio with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7.
Minutes into the Wednesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. We continue on here with our top five wins in 2025 and 2026. We have hit our honorable mention, our five, and our four. Funny enough, our four is the exact same, although we have different mindsets for this overall list, and they were both Auburn football against Baylor. And yes, man, real quickly before we move on with that, just the idea of, okay, man, they're running a 3-3-5 or whatever it was, and they're running too deep every single time, two safeties over top. They are not going to get beat with the long balls over the sidelines. But because of that, it left 6 yards just about every single time you wanted to put the ball in the gut of Jeremiah Cobb, Damari Alston at the time, Jackson Arnold. Even Eric Singleton had a couple of carries in there as well. Again, Auburn ran it 52 times for 307 yards and 4 touchdowns.
Yeah, that's like a Navy Army offense of just running the ball every single play and winning by a blowout. But yeah, I mean, for what it meant for the program, it's a good measuring stick of like, hey, we are still not a laughingstock in college football. We're not great, but we also play in the SEC, so it's tough. we'll go beat up any of your good teams. And I know Baylor ended up not being as good as they wanted to be, and I thought they'd be.
Wild because of how good Sawyer Robertson was.
Oh my goodness, him and the running game. I think preseason had Baylor as my first Big 12 team out.
Jacob had Baylor losing this game against Auburn, but then I believe winning the Big 12 and making it to the College Football Playoff when we had our overall predictions.
I had them going. I think I had them in the losing the Big 12 title game to Utah, and they were left out.
I still think about that.
Mm-hmm.
Clemson was winning my national title.
Same.
I also had Georgia Tech and Miami, the winner of that, getting into the playoff, and I had Georgia Tech being the sleeper.
I had so many good, like, I'm trying to think of, there was another one I had that was, like, frustrating. I think I had JMU, though. I think I did. I have to look through my notebook, either when I get home or commercial break. I might have it with me, of kind of some of my notes. But, no, I thought they were going to be pretty good. But, yeah, Baylor, that game was pretty nice.
Yeah, Baylor is both of our number fours and both of our lists of Auburn top five wins in 2025 and 2026. We move on to number three, and we will start with your third favorite win for Auburn this past season.
I have the two regional championship games against Milwaukee. First, Plainsman After Dark, phenomenal atmosphere. I'm sure that one is going to be high up on yours. If I know how, knowing how much fun we had at the game that night, I literally was sitting there playing Xbox with my buddies, or I had just gotten off. I'm about to go to bed, and I see a text from you to myself and Caleb Robertson, and said, "Hey guys, we're like, oh man, that's so awesome, you're staying, ha ha." He goes, "Oh, they're not checking tickets. Like, it's free. Come on." Me and Caleb go, "Okay." And we went, and it was so much fun. So that was great. But having and then that second game of Auburn getting ahead early and coasting and being able to win, even as there was a counterpunch here and there from Milwaukee, Auburn was able to play well. It was a good win in terms of you never can turn down a regional championship. I know how the season ended, but those two games proving that. That third Friday game, as much as we love that Milwaukee program, was a bit of a fluke, and Auburn was still a good team. That was nice and good for the program to add another regional win, another super regional appearance, and continuing to build a standard and a foundation of maybe that's not enough anymore. I know we've talked about that. Is regional championships enough, or do we want to go to Omaha and win super regionals? That is a building block. So I have that at number three.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. I may have that one on there as well, safe to say. And so I'll save my true thoughts on that for a few moments from now. I will stay on baseball, though,
okay,
for my third favorite. And I say win, but I guess I more so mean the entire week. From Saturday, March 14th to Saturday, March 21st.
That was the with the Texas game that Friday and the Georgia Tech game?
It was.
Okay. I'll allow it. I think that makes sense.
That was the doubleheader over Missouri to get SEC play sweep the Tigers on Saturday. You won 4-3 in 10 innings in game one. You then won 9-2 in the getaway game to sweep Missouri on the road. You then went home and played the biggest game in program history inside Plainsman Park, Auburn and Georgia Tech, number 4 versus number 3, and Auburn wins that one 9-2. So much hype. The biggest game ever. Until 3 days from then, when you took on Texas on Friday night and the walk-off win, you win it 4-3 over the second-ranked team in the country. That was alumni weekend, and I guess just from the standpoint of going a full week, although you lost game two, you lost it 7-6, the fight that you showed and the late heroics and the late rally, the fact that even in that battle, you got the bases loaded in the bottom of the ninth, and Bristol hit a ball that felt like it was twice as hard as the one he hit to center field the night before, but right to the third baseman. We were sitting right there on the third base side, and as soon as he hit it, I thought it was down the line. But third baseman was playing no doubles, and wisely so, rightfully so, a little one hop to him. And of course, you couldn't even have the dramatics of a throw over because the bases were loaded. He just calmly walked over third and stepped on the bag. So you were 3 feet to the left or 3 feet to the right of most likely walking that one off as well. But even with that loss, it showed, as you were talking about, the, okay, this team is legit. This team can compete with anybody in the country. And the fight that they had, even when things weren't working and you got punched in the mouth, and Aiden Robbins, I believe, hit two bombs that night after hitting one the night before. And again, it just showed the confidence of this unit. It showed how good the group was offensively when they wanted to be. And you saw zeros when you needed to. But I think that week as a whole was so fun to watch. The doubleheader, the sweep over Missouri, the 9-2 win over Georgia Tech, and then the Friday and even the Saturday game against Texas. So I put that kind of stretch as my number three win slash, I guess, moment, if I get a get out of jail free card for that, because making history twice in 3 days is pretty dang cool.
Oh yeah, no, I don't disagree with that. I think that counts, and you know, you could even include the Friday night Missouri game where they had the light delay for like yeah. 2 hours, which was ridiculous, and which Auburn was able to win that one. But yeah, I think that was good. I think for me, the only reason that I don't have like the Georgia Tech game in there is you then went on the road later that season and got squashed.
Yeah, sure.
And then Georgia Tech ended up getting squashed by Oklahoma. I mean, I say squashed if they didn't get walked off in their own ballpark. But I just like that. If you were to say like, yeah, Georgia, they beat Georgia Tech, who went to Omaha, and then Texas, who was in Omaha, I probably would have had the week as a whole. Instead, I'm going to pick the, you know, I had the Friday, just the Friday, because I really didn't think about it in terms of like a, other outside of the regional championship is my one exception, because that was against the same team in the same day, you could argue, because of what time Plainsman Park after dark ended. But I think that's a good answer.
It's the start. It was the start of SEC play, and it started in a very, very fun way.
Oh, no, I definitely don't disagree with that at all.
Number two.
What do you have?
What do you have?
I have.
All right, here we go. Rock, paper, scissors. Ready?
Ready. Rock, paper, scissors, shoot. Rock, paper, scissors, shoot. He went double
rock. All right, you're number two.
He did double rock. Oh, I cannot believe I fell for that. I'm going to go the golf national championship against UCLA. You have to.
That's a good one.
You have to. You know, I know that, like, for the vibes, looking at it from your list, like, there wasn't, like, fans other than, like, family or Auburn Tigers out in California that were out there. But Auburn being able to win a national championship in any sport, and you could even put in Jacoby Tharp in there as well. You could, or at least with track and field in a national championship, you have to have it somewhere on the list. And to send off Jackson Koivin's collegiate career with a national championship against UCLA, and that entire weekend, Auburn continued to fight. And then they played UCLA, like they fought against Oklahoma State, and then they get UCLA and roll to a title. We were able to watch the tail end of that together, and so that was so exciting. But I got to put a national championship in probably the best Auburn sport right now for the men on the links with the golf team. So I'm going to put that number two because it continues to not only build the legacy of Jackson Koivin, but got those young guys some experience so that next year they're not going to lose a step.
For some reason, blanked on the national championship. I guess from an overall fan, I did sit and watch all of it. Just, I guess from the hype perspective of how gentleman's game golf is, it fits. But
sure.
Yeah, that's a good one. I'm glad you said it because I don't have that on mine, and that would be a bad one to leave out. My number two is, we talked about the moment against Kentucky, and I'm going back to basketball, and it's making their way down to Gainesville, Florida.
Okay.
Auburn in Florida, best team arguably at the time in the country, the ruckus environment, and Keyshawn Hall goes off, especially in the first half. It felt like three-pointers were layups for him, and the moment at the end, the Keyshawn Murphy dunk at the end to kind of ice it and put the cherry on top of Auburn's historic win inside of inside the Swamp. I almost said Condren Family Ballpark, but no, not in front of there. But they did go and win the series there, so that should have been a good one to put on there as well.
Yeah.
But Auburn basketball for me going down to Gainesville, winning that one. I didn't make the trip, obviously. We were over with our friends in Hoover, and they were not the most sports-minded people. And I was like, I'm so sorry. We can do whatever we want to do, but my phone is going to be on. It's going to be sideways because I'm going to be watching Auburn basketball take on Florida. Keyshawn Hall had 24 in the game. Keyshawn Murphy had 16 and 9 KO. Dang it.
Yeah.
You didn't hear it, did you?
No.
Oh, good. I went to ESPN and my computer started playing another ad.
Oh, no. Don't worry. We're good.
Yeah, Tahab had 11, but Auburn won at 76 to 67. Auburn was 19 of 21 from the free throw line. Florida was 16 of 27 from the free throw line. They were 7 of 27 from deep. I don't really know why that Florida team shot 27 threes against the Tigers. Obviously because, Auburn's not a great defensive team, but when you look at it, and Alex Condren had 1 point. He did have 4 fouls, and I know he was held out, but he still played 37 minutes. Houck had 27, but without him, this game is nowhere near even as close as it could have been. Chinyi Luu only had 10 and 7. And so, funny enough, we sat there and said, okay, maybe the identity is found. I believe it was, we talked about the best 60 minutes that this Auburn basketball team played all season long. It was the second half against Ole Miss in Oxford, where you had to win a really, really physical game, and then going to Florida. And those 60 minutes were the best this Auburn team played all season long, to where we came back and said, okay, maybe this is the identity. Maybe this can be what this team found of being able to get downhill, not relying on the three-pointer. And then they went to Florida, and they doubled down, only shooting 15. They went 5 of 15. If you told me that Auburn scored 76 points against Florida in Gainesville and won the game only making 5 threes, I wouldn't have believed you.
No, that's a good one. I didn't have that on my list, but that game was so big at the time in a vacuum. I remember watching that game with some buddies at a restaurant, and we were kind of like, okay, Auburn is not expected to win this game. They've traditionally struggled so much in Gainesville in almost every sport, but specifically basketball. This is kind of a tough place to play, especially with what Todd Golden has done with the Gators. And then you turn around and, oh, Auburn's playing good. Okay, they're keeping it competitive. They have a lead early. Let's see, kind of wait for the Florida counterpunch. A punch that never came. And Auburn was able to win that one. But looking at it, like, through the eyes, not only in the vacuum, which was number one for me, but number two, the season at large, if Florida had made a Final Four, it'd probably be up. I know it's the defending national champions at the time, but getting round of 32 by Iowa hurt their case so much. And for some, what was such a good team, and Auburn, if that had been a win to spark a program turnaround that season, great. It was really the last big win for that team. So I don't have that on my list. I probably have it near Florida, or not near Florida, near Oklahoma in the honorable mention category. But I think that's a solid one to have for sure.
Wild to think that that was a four-game stretch, a four-game win stretch that you felt like Auburn needed to have after falling to Georgia and Texas A&M to get SEC play started. You go and route Arkansas, but you shot better than the Hogs on that night. But the fact that, again, you won that one 95-73. You then lose at Missouri 84-74, and you're sitting there at 1-3 in conference play, and it's like, holy cow, what are we doing? A win over South Carolina, which was a very, very ugly win that was a lot more dramatic in the late stages of the game than it probably needed to be. Ole Miss at Florida and then Texas. That was the best stretch of the year for the Tigers, and who thought that a 6-point win over Texas would have turned out to be a really, really solid win, because you walked away outside of Neville Arena and it was kind of like, All right. Yeah. Auburn won, went to 4-3, and then you lost a tough one at Tennessee. You lost a tough one to Alabama at home, and that was kind of the spark of a lot of gray L's when you scroll down through this list. But that Florida win is going to make this year a whole lot of fun, the return trip for the Florida Gators to Neville Arena. You know that will be on their mind. And the preseason favorites to win the whole thing definitely deserve to be on this list. We will take a break. We'll come back, and we have our favorite moment, our favorite win of Auburn's 2025-2026 year. We'll talk about that as wrap up hour number one right after this.
You are on the line with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line, and wrapping up the full conversation of our top five Auburn wins in 2025 and 2026. Real quickly, five through two for me: Auburn basketball against Kentucky, Auburn football versus Baylor, Auburn baseball the week of March 14th through the 21st with the series sweep over Missouri, the Georgia Tech win, and then Friday night against Texas, and then Auburn basketball against Florida. That is my five through two. For Trip, it is the Friday night win over Texas. So that is his number five. At Baylor, week one for Hugh Freeze and Auburn football was his four. The regional championship versus Milwaukee, that was the full championship. The late game into the earlier night game,
yeah,
the later that evening, and then the national championship for men's golf for number one. Are we rock, paper, scissoring again for our number one?
I did it last time. You should do it this time. Make it fair.
Fine. My favorite moment for Auburn over 2025 and 2026 was, in fact, Plainsman Park after dark. That
fair.
Was.
Yeah.
There have been two moments that stand out to me from just the fan perspective, and so much of this goes in credit and in thanks to the administration and those again, Rhett Hobart, who we got to talk to a little bit before the Ole Miss Super Regional, just with the team and the creativity, the ability to get it done when they need to get it done. But everything that they did for fan engagement of the hot dogs and the beer, but then the coffee and everything as well. And there are two moments that stand out to me as some of the most fun that I have ever had at an Auburn event, beyond like the prayer of Jordan Hare and the kick six, which thankfully was in attendance for both of those as
wow.
as a youngster.
Lucky.
But the night games, the rain delays, and the energy in the ballpark for Coastal Carolina, the night game, the game one that got rained out or got big time delayed, and it was possibly going to be pushed to tomorrow, but everybody that wanted to waited it out. That one was a whole lot of fun. And then the same thing for Milwaukee, that the night game, the Plainsman Park after dark, the energy, the engagement, and how loud the crowd was for it being 31% full, but it felt like a Friday night in the SEC. Just the overall environment, the way that the players responded to it, and after sweeping or after getting the regional win, seeing the players walk all around Plainsman Park, it was really, really cool to see. So that is my number one.
No, that's a good one. I think it's very again, I said it a little bit earlier. It was absolutely fantastic. The music kicking us out right here, so I think we'll wait till second hour, and I go a little bit more depth. We'll quickly do it before moving on to some other topics.
Yeah, sorry, I got caught up, got excited.
No,
so
it was a good game to get excited about. I said it. It was one of the best times that I've had. It's the best time I've had as a fan in Plainsman Park. One of the best in Auburn for sure.
Yeah, definitely worth getting the text and saying that you need to go attend it, because it was
yes.
a whole lot of fun. Hour number one in the books. We'll get Tripp's number one win in 2025 and 2026 before we dive into this year and talk a little bit more drama with Brennan Sorsby.
The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text in at 334-784-1067. The boys are bringing you all the action on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. When it comes to the Tigers, the SEC, and the hottest topics in sports, this is where you want to be.
It's July 8th. We thought it was done, but there is now more Brendan Sorsby drama.
Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, straight from the ESPN 106.7 studio, here's Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton.
Hour number one in the books. We welcome you into hour number two here on this Wednesday afternoon. Appreciate everybody for being here with us on the line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin, having a fun time here in the studio this afternoon. Had a very fun hour number one that we still need to get to our final little pick here this afternoon. But a very, very fun afternoon, a very fun week it's been, just really conversational, as again, there's not too much to dive into specifics in the sports world of things. But we will dive into a little bit of Auburn here, a little bit in hour number two. Also, again, the Brendan Sorsby drama. But in hour number one, it was a lot of our conversation of the top five Auburn wins in 2025 and 2026. This was ranking from all across Auburn Athletics. This was in terms of just the overall importance or just the fan perspective. And that was a little bit of what I took, much more of just the fan enjoyment perspective of, man, I watched this game and this was some of the most fun that I had. Trip took a little bit more of the business model, the if you got this win, what it looked like for your program, for the future, how big that moment could be, or just the perfect definition of describing what that sport was in 2025, in 2026. My list was Auburn basketball against Kentucky at 5, Auburn football versus Baylor at 4, Auburn baseball the week of March 14th through the 21st at 3, the series sweep over Missouri, Georgia Tech, and then Friday night against Texas. You can throw that all into one win, right? Why not? All sure. A big win because of the records that were set. Auburn basketball against Florida as my number 2, and then Plainsman Park after dark, my number 1. The most fun that I had at a sport event for Auburn this year. So that is my list for Trip. You had the Friday night win over Texas at 5, Baylor 4, the regional championship, Plainsman Park after dark, games 2 and 3 of that championship being at your number 3, the national championship at number 1. And so all of that was in, I'm sorry, at number 2, but all of that was in our number 1. If you missed any of it, you can always go back and check it out at our podcast center over at ESPNAU.com.
And in our number 2, we're going to touch up on the latest on the Brendan Sorsby drama with now maybe another program that I have been saying and Christian's been saying and almost everybody outside of Southern Ohio has been saying, hey, you need to look into the Bearcat program. It sounds like the NCAA is listening to those concerns. We'll also talk a little basketball, looking at what a highly, highly respected basketball pundit has to say about the SEC, where Auburn falls in, where Alabama falls in, and more, as well as some new news and an article talking about what Stephen Pearl wants to be doing with this basketball program coming in 2026 and 7. But if you want to be a part of the conversation, as today is kind of the free-for-all Wednesday, phone lines will be open the entire second hour, 334-321-1390. Give us a call. Let us know your opinion, your list, anything. I mean, we saw what it looked like yesterday with all of the phone calls and the conversation with you guys generated. The text box as well, open at 334-784-1OTL.
Yeah, really excited to continue this conversation. Looks like we have a phone call that we'll get to here in just a moment. Tripp's going to answer that for us. But yes, Brendan Sorsby drama that we thought we were done with because my goodness, you just get to the point where you feel like you shouldn't have to still hear his name after what you thought was, okay, he's going to be suspended 2 games. Okay, nope, now he's entired, or he can't play the entire season. And now it's, okay, I'm going to prepare for the 2027 draft because we're not going to have any sort of supplemental draft for Brennan Sorsby. And you thought that was going to be the end of it, but how dare us think that that was going to be the end of it, because now the NCAA has begun looking into Cincinnati. But we will get to that here in just a moment. We will also get to trips number one here in just a moment as well. But I think we got some priorities we got to take care of.
Yes, we have a caller on the phone line, which you can be a part of, 334-321-1390. Clay, a.k.a. Dwight from Montgomery, my friend, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good, guys. I like your list. And I don't argue with many of those, but I think the greatest win we had last year was against the Georgia Bulldogs when we went up 3 touchdowns, when we clearly scored a touchdown on a quarterback dive over the end zone, and we went up 3 scores and dominated the rest of the game.
Yeah, that one, and then the ability to force the 3-and-out right before halftime as well.
The obviously sarcasm, but that I was at that game.
Oh yeah,
That's probably the second angriest I've ever been at an Auburn football game.
Am I allowed to ask the first?
It was so blatant. Oh, the first was the first angriest was when Georgia in 1990 laid down on the football when there was a clear fumble and the referees did not stop the clock and let the clock run out when Auburn was on the 1-yard line. Go back and look at the 1990 game. It was Auburn, Georgia, and Ray Goff run out. I'm in the student section. He runs out. At that point, they had to come through the student section. He's shooting double birds to the entire student section, and people are throwing cups and everything at him. That's the angriest I've ever been after leaving a game. I've been disappointed a lot.
Sure.
Sure, yeah.
How funny is it, though, that your two angriest moments have been the Deep South oldest rivalry and fumbles, right?
I would rather beat Georgia next year than Alabama.
I don't think that's an overly dramatic statement, to be completely honest with you. And I know that's being from Alabama, it should always be Alabama. But having grown up in Georgia, the Georgia ties, I don't feel as if I am too far away from an opinion like that.
Yeah, because like Alabama is like your older brother, and it's like, I hope I can beat you.
Right.
But Georgia is like, I really hate you. You're my in-law's son that I ain't even kin to that has to come to the cookout every year.
And you just have to give a plate to him, although you don't want to?
That's right. It's like, here, take this burnt hot dog you throw to them. But my number one sports moment for Auburn this year would have to be, and y'all did mention it, has to be Jacoby Tharp.
That's a good one. Yeah, that was one.
He set the world record in the 110 high hurdles. He beat Edwin Moses time in the 110 high hurdles. That's not a small accomplishment.
No, and the biggest part about it may be the interview afterwards that he said he felt like that was his slowest run all week.
Yeah.
Saying that he had more in the tank. You feel like that just doesn't make sense whatsoever.
Well, and I'm a little more attached to – I ran track and field. I was not a great athlete. High school, I was good in high school. Never, no college, no anything. I'm not one of those guys. But
you should have said it confidently. I would have believed you.
Yeah.
that was okay. I was at Auburn in 1991 running the 110 high hurdles, and I broke the world record, but they said it was wind aided.
Oh, man. Oh, my, so that's why it's your number one, because your record is no longer on the plaque.
Well, it was wind-aided, and I disagreed, because I had a caliper out there to detect the wind, but theirs said it was too fast. But I do, to be serious, I think that's one of the greatest accomplishments of any Auburn athlete, even including Bo Jackson, that has ever happened, to break a world record, wow. Not just the collegiate record, and our whole track team. I mean, we broke our 4x100 mm-hmm. is phenomenal. They broke the college record again this year. So those would be two of my top five, because our football team sucks. And our basketball team, they only had a couple of good wins. And now baseball, you could fill up, you could do five wins with baseball, because they're doing well.
Yeah, you could do five wins for football too, Clay. What do you mean?
your
number
religion.
One football moment wasn't beating South Alabama 31-16.
Well, we had to come back in that game. Their trip.
Goodness, yeah, that was for sure.
But no, that's quite an accomplishment, and I hope that Auburn does something to remember that he set a world record while at Auburn wearing that uniform, because I always loved in the Olympics watching the swimmers mm-hmm. back when we had a great swim team. I always loved them having the AU yeah. on the side of their caps. It just made me proud as an Auburn person.
Yeah, hopefully if we see Tharp in the 2028 Los Angeles Olympics, maybe he might see that Auburn logo.
Oh, yeah.
If he does not get injured, he absolutely would be there.
Yeah.
Edwin Mosen was my idol of all of the sports people. Edwin Moses and Magic Johnson, those were my two idols. And he is better than Edwin Moses. That is absolutely incredible.
Yeah, we agree. We're looking forward to seeing
that. That would be my number one.
No, that's a good one. That's definitely a good one for sure.
All right, guys.
Dwight, appreciate the call. Yes, sir. Appreciate you for calling in, giving your insight. Because, we had mentioned it, but it wasn't on our list, I guess, just from the team aspect. But, yes, when you're looking at accomplishments and that almost sets and not going against what Clay is saying, but that almost sets, like, the athletics as a whole. And I know that's kind of what we're diving into, but you feel like that's almost like just the stepping stone above. That's the concrete slab that's over just about everything, because I mean that's the coolest accomplishment that you're ever going to see.
Oh no, that's so sick. I mean, Jacoby Tharp, I think Clay would probably agree with me here, running faster than the refs in the 92 Auburn Georgia game that he was referencing earlier with the fumble at the end. That was, that's a good frustrating moment, I guess. But yeah, Jacoby Tharp is one of the best Auburn athletes, I'd say, of all time. I really want to see how the rest of his career kind of pans out, because obviously he was well known being a guy that could compete for it and then does it mm-hmm. and breaks the record. I'm so excited if he, knock on wood, if he could stay healthy and get to Los Angeles, I'm sure that stock will rise even higher. And it's now time for my number one.
Yes.
For this list. And this is a game that no one except me wanted to play in. And that was the NIT championship game.
You're going to fire some people up here on this Wednesday.
Absolutely. Look, we can look at the game itself. Kevin Overton hitting a game tying three with like 5 seconds left to send it to overtime. Yes, it had the highs. Auburn was up big. It had the lows. A 22-2 run in 5 minutes for Tulsa. Yeah, exactly. And when it looked like Auburn was gonna Jabba, it was gonna Auburn it. They score 5 points in like 5 seconds in the getting the tip, getting the ball, three-pointer in the corner, electrifying. You win a championship, and because of the championship and because of that, Kevin Overton really went from a quality starter to a number one, number two option on this team. You saw Tahad Pettiford say, you know what, we gelled so well, I'm going to stick around. They were able to keep some key guys and give Stephen Pearl and this program some direction. I know that it's still jury's still out for a lot of people, but the way they were able to turn lemons into lemonade and compete, and on top of it, a fantastic game between the Golden Hurricanes and the Tigers. I remember I was down at the beach watching this game Easter weekend, and I was with a bunch of Georgia fans, and they were like, oh, Auburn's going to blow it again. Ha, ha, ha. Auburn's going to blow it again. And I was like, just wait. Like, okay, it's whatever. And then they hit the three, and I popped off right in their faces, just got up and was like, let's go, and was getting fired up. That's got to be my number one, not only from the vibes but all in the game itself, but also what it meant for what this next basketball season could be. If they can turn around and be a top level seed, like a 7 or higher, I think you point back to this game as the first stepping stone, the first real game of the 26-27 season for Auburn.
Yeah, I think it's a perfect point of maybe not just the most exciting win over the entire calendar year, but from your mentality, your standpoint of your five list of what this could mean for the future. And so,
yeah.
Again, we're going to wait and see about where Auburn is set up to be. How about a perfect little segue into Mr. John Rothstein and his list of the predictions for the Southeastern Conference. Ain't no way that Auburn fans disagree with this one, as the basketball expert himself doesn't have the Tigers listed too high. We'll talk about that when we come back, because we're just off and running here in hour number two on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Stick around.
You're on the line with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton. If you want to be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text us at 334-784-1067.
Back here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. Appreciate everybody for being here with us. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin, and we wrap up, or I guess we finished up, our conversation of the top five Auburn wins in 2025 and 2026. And Tripp's was his favorite, or the number one he had on his list, was the NIT championship against Tulsa in basketball, not just because of the moment itself, but for what the moment could mean for the future of Auburn basketball. And it leads perfectly into the basketball conversations that we have scheduled for you here this afternoon. And it's Mr. John Rothstein and his SEC preseason power rankings. And Auburn is just expected to be, you know, a top four team. They're expected to be a three seed in March Madness. Everything is supposed to be rainbows and flowers and butterflies. And you didn't get to where you wanted to be last year, but thankfully everybody is fully bought into this season, right?
Not so fast.
Ooh.
John Rothstein, Auburn, listed at the number 11 in the SEC. Just to run through the teams or over them, Florida, the top-ranked team. I don't think there's any disagreement with that. They're running back their entire roster, minus some improvements, as well as Mr. Todd Golden staying and not going to Golden State. That's a big one. Texas at 2 is interesting, though. That's a team that I think that they have a good foundation, but, and they have good transfers, but can they put it together and do it in the regular season? We saw them get hot during the tournament, but can they do it in the regular season? Tennessee 3, Arkansas 4, Kentucky 5. Really no problems with any of those there. Vanderbilt 6, Alabama at 7. That seems very low. I know they're losing LeBaron Filan and looking for a true number one, but Alabama, I feel like Nate Oates can get that team year in, year out to be a top four team in the SEC.
At least competing to be some. I don't think that there's too much arguments, though, with the top four right now. And then what Kentucky could be, what Tyler Tanner is expected to be at Vanderbilt. I think 1 through 6, regardless, two through six, because you could make the argument for just about anybody. I don't think Florida gets knocked off anybody's list for the preseason number one power ranking, probably the number one team in the country. I know Joe Lunardi, for their updated bracketology, which means a whole lot here on July 8th, has Florida as the number one overall seed for the tournament. But two through six, you don't feel like there are as many question marks for the team. Alabama, I think, is kind of that first team that still has a lot that they need to be figured out. Arkansas, although they're the number four team, they have to figure out that point guard spot as well with Acuff being gone. But I feel like two through six, you could almost interchange based off of conversation, based off of strength at certain positions. And so
sure.
I don't necessarily mind that, the left side of the graphic that we're looking at.
Yes, and looking at the lower half of the SEC, quote-unquote, Missouri coming in at that number eight, Texas A&M, Buckyball at that number nine. I think those are two teams that 100% could either be four spots lower or four spots higher.
Yeah, you almost feel like those two teams won't finish in that 8-9.
No, no way at all. Georgia at number 10, another team that could finish maybe closer to 7, but could also fall back down to the lower end of the basketball spectrum. Yeah, again, Auburn at 11, and we'll come back to talking more about the Auburn-specific side of it in a moment. Ole Miss at number 12, a kind of a make-or-break year for Chris Beard, a guy that has been lauded as one of the best coaches in the country, but has never really put it together since leaving Texas Tech. I think this year I could see them making the tournament and him being safe. I could see him not having a job in Oxford, Mississippi at the end of this year. Oklahoma at 13, another guy in Porter Moses that could be an interesting look there. Mississippi State at 14, another, again, Chris Jans, the same thing. South Carolina at 15, and then LSU, incomplete. I think that there's just so much we have to wait and see what the NCAA is going to want from the Bayou Bengals and Will Wade of who's allowed to play, who's not allowed to play. Again, that's a team that could be, you could put them at number 5, and I wouldn't really bat an eye. You could put that team at number 12, and I wouldn't bat an eye.
The only thing that we know about LSU right now is Will Wade's going to be coaching, and Amir Khan just transferred.
I saw that. I almost
the headlines that got. For those that don't know, Amir Khan is the guy during the McNeese basketball runs that would walk the team out with the boombox on his shoulder.
I saw that. I think honestly, like, I almost put that on the rundown, and I was going to have like one of those like short segments and be like the most important news, and then not tell you what it is, and be like, what is this news? Amir Khan is going from McNeese to LSU, a big group of five get, and just hype it up and then just tell you it's Amir Khan. But yeah, LSU is such a volatile team with what they could be. So John making the smart decision, in my opinion, to just say, hey, because they're not worse than South Carolina. It's just the we don't know yet mentality. So once LSU is kind of their roster is finalized, you'll see that team probably somewhere in the middle of the pack in the SEC for now.
Looking up the Auburn SEC opponents that were released 2 weeks ago or so, and wanted to compare this just based off of what
I mean,
Auburn
you traveled a number
has to play. And yeah, looking at that, again, we talked about the road stretch that the Auburn Tigers have.
You traveled a 2. I believe you traveled to Texas. You traveled to number 9 in Texas A&M. You traveled to Arkansas, or is Arkansas home?
Sorry,
home?
Don't travel to Florida this year, but you travel to number 2 in Texas. You travel to number 4 in Arkansas, to number 5 in Kentucky, to number 6 in Vanderbilt. So
7 in Alabama.
Holy cow, 7 in Alabama. So the only teams you don't go to this year that are a top half of projected SEC teams is
Florida and Tennessee.
Florida and Tennessee.
I mean,
that's wild to think about. And I guess the top half, you don't go to Missouri. So three, 5, and 8. Nope, you play Kentucky on the road. What was I?
1, 3, and 8.
Yes, 1, 3, and 8. Those are the teams that you don't go to in the top half of the power rankings on the road. You still play those, but
I mean, if you could steal some victories on the road, like if you could go to Lexington, Nashville, Tuscaloosa, even Fayetteville, if you could steal one of the, a couple, like two of those games mm-hmm. and just use the home crowd in the jungle in Neville Arena to your advantage against the home games you're going to have, Auburn can 100% improve on what their projected 8 seed. They could finish way higher than 11th for sure, just based on that schedule.
Yeah, I mean, you get a couple of the wins that you hope to get on the road, and then you win the games that you need to win at home. Looking at the home and home for Auburn, obviously, again, Alabama, LSU, and Ole Miss. You don't have Georgia in that home and home, which, funny enough, I think that's the first time in how long that Georgia was projected in the power rankings and basketball-wise higher than the Auburn Tigers. I mean,
makes sense. I mean, they were coming off a year where they're an 8 seed. Yeah, they lose a couple of key pieces, but again, if maybe this was the teams that can be really good in the regular season, a Mike White team's always going to be there. If you were to have to include the postseason, no, you know they'd be a little lower. Sorry, Georgia fans, it's just a fact. Mike White, not very good in the postseason, but and I guess we can't really say what Stephen Pearl is in the postseason because he's only played the NIT and the SEC tournament, not March Madness. But I think that Auburn, I like Auburn's place here. I know it's a little lower than I think I'd expect, but it's more of the teams above them are just really, really good. It's kind of like baseball where you finish 10th in the SEC, you barely scrape out a 500 record in conference play, and you're still hosting a regional. So
it's wild to think, looking at Georgia, this was in 2025, but the last time they were ranked before 25 was in 2011. And so shows it's been quite some time since Georgia was the power rankings listed higher than the Auburn Tigers. But your home and homes are Alabama, who again is listed as the 7th team. This is all according to John Rothstein for the SEC preseason power rankings, which we know means not a whole lot, but at least his name carries weight in terms of legitimate value, right?
You sure.
feel like it's somebody that the kids would say knows ball.
I mean, I do like the bit that he does. I know, maybe I'd be a little bit played out by now, but it's like when something big is happening in another sport, he'll tweet out like, Ja'Kai Howard commits to Long Island University.
I did see that.
I mean, that is kind of Auburn related news. I know we're probably not going to talk about it in depth, but just like an example of just like Maryhurst has a new head coach this year. Can they be good? He'll tweet that during like Messi scoring a goal to win the World Cup, like the bit that he's had. And I do like it. I think it's a little played out, but this dude eats, sleeps, and lives college hoops. So yeah. I do trust his judgment on this for sure.
Hopefully we don't trust his judgment when it comes to the Auburn Tigers, though, who are projected 11th in the SEC preseason power rankings. And weirdly that this Auburn basketball team kind of fits the Auburn football team as well, of so many question marks of this could really work, this might not work. It's very much in wait and see it mode, but I don't think that is the worst spot for the Tigers to be. I think that there are spots that could be I feel like you could be in a worse spot, I guess, is the easiest way to say it. I feel like I know we mentioned Texas A&M is like they could finish four spots higher or four spots lower, but it's like you know what you're getting with Texas A&M. You feel like with this Auburn team, there are so many new faces, so many new bodies, that there are so many different ways that you can run an offense, so many ways that you can set up your defense, and I think that's a big-time advantage for the Auburn Tigers. And speaking of defense, before we do get to our break, before the music kicks us out again, pushed it back just a little bit to make sure we could get all of this in one segment for you, but Stephen Pearl and the Auburn Tigers have gone back to a little bit more of the basics in terms of what they're doing defensively. This was an article from our good buddy Nathan King of Auburn Undercover and Auburn 24/7 Sports. But basically, summarizing it is the fact that Auburn was 109th in defensive rating last year, and they were 251st in opponent scoring rates. Those are very, very frustrating things for Stephen Pearl to have to think about, considering his defensive mindset that you've seen him be so successful over the last handful of years. Back-to-back top 10 finishes in 2021 and 2022 when looking at KenPom, but there were no questions that Auburn was relatively poor defensively, especially guarding the three, and then defensive rebounding as well. And so right now, We've learned a little bit about the roster, and we've learned that, okay, if your point guard or your shooting guards or the guys out on the wing, if they do get blown by, or if the ball handler gets in front of you, you don't have to have that full collapse, right? Because you now have that true center position, or at least a couple of the big bodies that you don't have to sit there and all collapse, and it makes the kick out wide open three that much easier. That being said, that's obviously not the way that you want to play basketball. No. You don't want to let the point guard get into the lane, get to the free throw line, because the way that point guards are so creative now, it's not only finishing, but at drawing fouls as well, which is a big part of the game, whether we like it or not. Stephen Pearl has taken a little bit more of the mindset, and he has said, quote, right now, it has all been one-on-one defense. Who can keep their man in front of them and who can't? These are during the summer practices, but I think that's a good mentality to have of, okay, we're not getting back to the laziness of we're going to go for steals. We're going to just let the guys get around us because we have the big bodies in the paint. You got to stop the ball, whether that's at half court, whether that's at the three-point line, and we're going to figure out really early on who has the mentality of willingness to play defense, who has the skill to stay in front of these best ball handlers in the country, because those are the guys that are going to eat minutes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if Stephen Pearl could get his way, the ball would never pass the three-point line, and just ferocious man-on-man defense. And, oh, if you somehow manage to, here's 2 7-footers. Make a layup.
Mm-hmm.
Or take a analytically and statistically less likely deep two-pointer.
Yeah, take a 15-foot contested jumper to where one guy can at least defend it, and the other guys can go and crowd the rim so you can go and get the rebounds.
Yeah, I think that this – I love that. I think that defense first needs to be what they are, because they have shooters. They have guys – you can't – I mean, you can teach shooting to an extent, but it's a very finesse thing. Defense, you can drill into guys' heads and rotations. You're not going to see the drives to the basket, kicks out to the corner, and the Auburn player lazily runs up and tries to contest. And I feel like we saw way too much, to be point-blank honest, last season. You're going to now see a team that is calculated and aggressive, attacking the ball and not letting it escape when they force it into an advantageous position.
I bet things are different.
Oh,
what do you say? Would you be willing to wait?
I'm taking the over.
Yeah, I bet things are going to be different. We talk Brendan Sorsby news when we come back.
Halfway through hour number two, you're on the line with Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
About 20 more minutes here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. He's Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. And we move from the basketball conversation to not even the football conversation, because there is no football with this name this year. He can prepare for the 2027 draft, but we thought we had moved on from the Brendan Sorsby drama. Yet that being said, the drama that is now surfacing, I guess it's not considered drama quite yet, but the NCAA is hopeful that there is a little bit of drama, I can assure you. Brendan Sorsby, who we all know with the injunctions and with the suspensions, and now was preparing for a supplemental draft. The NFL said, no, we're not going to have one, because we know that that's your way of just trying to get out. Your get-out-of-jail-free card. You're trying to not handle any of your consequences face-to-face. You're just trying to back away, and you're not going to take advantage of our league like that. So because of that, you're not eligible for the 2026 draft either. You can prepare for 2027 if you so choose. After a couple of days, Brendan Sorsby made the statement about, I look forward to preparing for the 2027 draft. Everything happens for a reason. And I bet he's right. It does happen for a reason. But the news that we have heard more recently, you feel like, is the news that the common person has wanted to dive into a little bit more. And that is now the fact of the NCAA has now opened an inquiry into Cincinnati regarding Brendan Sorsby, because they knew about the bets during his time at Indiana, not only for his team, but on other professional wagers and it being thousands and thousands of bets and upwards of $100,000, if not more, that were wagered during that period of time. But it was very much so the Cincinnati sitting in the corner trying to tuck their tail and, you know, sure, Cincinnati, you can get the headlines. Texas Tech, sure, you can get the headlines. I'm going to see myself out. And finally somebody said, no, 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 you're going to stay in this room as well because you're not out of the water. Because now they're looking into Cincinnati, A, to see if there were any bets that Sorsby placed while he was there, and B, to see if there is any information that they knew about it. And I think that's big.
Thank you, NCAA, because...
Didn't have that on the bingo card today, thanking the NCAA.
Seriously, wow. But no, I fully think this is the right idea, because Texas Tech fans, during their media circus borderline humiliation ritual that they went on earlier this summer with, we're going to play him, and then put out a 23-minute video saying why we're going to play him, and then telling him to leave, all within like a week of each other. The one point that they made every single time was, why isn't no one looking at Cincinnati right now? He played for them, and there are documents saying they might have known. Why is no one looking into that? And they're looking into us, who he's legitimately just done like a spring game.
Yeah.
He's never done practice. He's not played a game in a Red Raider uniform. What, you're going to make the red team forfeit the spring game because he was on the red team? Like, no, you're not going to do that. You should punish the guys that actually played him for a season. And they are 100% right, because if he had a problem and he was betting on his team when he didn't have control of the offense or the game in Indiana, imagine what he could have done and what they need to look into when he was the starting quarterback of a team. And I don't even say this as a hater of Cincinnati necessarily. I don't like the city itself necessarily. I've never been, but I know a girl that was from Cincinnati, and she was like, it was like her whole person. I was like, I love the Bengals. I love Skyline Chili. I like it with cheese and this and spaghetti and all this stuff. And I'm just like, no, that's disgusting. Don't do that. Like, and she didn't like me because I made fun of Joe Burrow one time. But that's a story for another day. But no, looking at it and saying that they deserve to be looked at because they were noticeably silent during that whole, you know, Big 12 argument. Mm-hmm. But they let him play in Big 12 games, you know? And that should be the scrutiny of if they knew, and if he even made bets while on the Cincinnati team, then I think that we should be kind of the conversations. I hate, you know, I don't think they're going to make him forfeit the 7 wins he got there and the loss to Navy in the bowl game, but a bowl ban? I would be okay with that. Are they going to make a bowl game this year? I don't know, because I don't really like Scott Satterfield, but I think that this Cincinnati program deserves to be investigated because they did what everyone was going ahead and accusing Texas Tech of doing.
Yeah, it was basically we're going to continue and point the finger with everybody else, but as soon as the finger gets pointed at me, like, whoa, whoa, no, we didn't do any of that. We in fact, didn't even know anything about it. This is all from the article that was released about 45 minutes before the start of the show here this afternoon from Eli Letterman, and the top of it says, the NCAA has sent a letter of inquiry to Cincinnati centered on former quarterback Brendan Sorsby's time with the program, sources told ESPN on Wednesday. Sorsby, who was ruled permanently ineligible by the NCAA this spring after he admitted to placing thousands of impermissible sports bets over the past 4 years, spent 2 seasons with the Bearcats before transferring to Texas Tech this offseason. This all sparked because of the Big 12 media days where Scott Satterfield declined to comment on any Brendan Sorsby matter, which I don't know if that's the smart move or not. That was obviously the route that the PR team decided to take because you knew that was going to be a question, but deciding not to take doesn't necessarily help the cause now of the inquiry being thrown at you, but says, we've had continuous conversations. This is what They provided a general statement saying, we have had continuous conversations with the NCAA since the initial reports related to impermissible sports wagerings began. As we stated before, we do not believe any athletics official or staff member was aware of any of these sports wagerings. And again, after being permanently banned in May over a years-long trial of bets that totaled an estimated $90,000 across his time just at Indiana, based on the paragraph up. Sorsby acknowledged placing at least 165 bets on college and professional sports, totaling at least $38,000 in 2024, including three wagers on Cincinnati men's basketball team, men's basketball bets made on a FanDuel account that he shared with a friend. Between December 2023 and June of 2025, Sorsby provided more than $60,000 to that friend to deposit into the shared account. But based on betting history obtained by the NCAA, there was no evidence that Sorsby funded, placed, or what was otherwise any involvement in the Cincinnati football team during his 2 years as a starter. And so,
sure,
do with that what you will. He placed bets for on the basketball team, but as long as it wasn't his own sport, then we will just keep you permanently banned.
Yeah.
But I think that this now goes a lot bigger and a lot wider than just Brennan Sorsby. This is just the example. This goes into Cincinnati having any sort of knowledge to it. This goes into any staff members that possibly had any knowledge to it. Any people that are involved, because I know that, shoot, I had to sign up for it. There are apps that basically restrict any sort of gambling on your phone. Like it won't download any apps or anything like that. And they can see, it basically sends a notification to them, an alert, if you do try and sign up for it, or if you attend these certain websites because of us being collegiate student athletes. And so a wild topic that you feel like is working its way towards the end, but for all you know, this inquiry is going to go a whole lot deeper, and Lord knows the other names that are going to be either drug into this or what the future inquiries are going to work its way throughout college sports.
Yeah, I think that is a very valid thing that they need to look at. Even if he didn't bet on Cincinnati football, it's against the law and or against the rules for the NCAA. And again, if Brennan Sorsby comes back to Cincinnati, they are 100% like getting restrictions, and they are the team that everyone's making fun of, not just Texas Tech. Now, I think that the Texas Tech fans and the Texas Tech media and the Texas Tech administration continue, and because they were a national championship contender and he was a top portal prospect, that was the reason it was so big. But if he's the starting quarterback at Cincinnati, I think a lot of that, maybe not all of it, because again, besides the program, Cincinnati would be the team under fire right now for playing him, knowing it. And we're probably looking at Cincinnati being barred from a bowl game if he was the starter and him being permanently ineligible. I think that should still happen. I don't think Texas Tech should have to get a bowl ban or anything, because they made the right decision at the end of the day, albeit maybe whether they wanted to or not want to, jury's still out. But Cincinnati should go under some sort of punishment, in my opinion.
A text box message on the way out before we head to break from Mr. President Eric, who says he is on the beach. Thanks for the invite. We would have done a remote the beach, but said he has not missed a single beat of the show, saying if Sorsby or in just about any other line of work or business, this would be simple. An employer could decide whether to hire him, fire him, or give him a second chance. That is the problem with college football in 2026. There isn't really an employer. Student athletes aren't employees, yet schools are making multi-million dollar roster decisions with very little legal clarity. So if Cincinnati knew or should have known about his gambling issues, what kind of ramifications would or should there be for them anyways? He says that it seems like a big waste of time.
I mean, I understand that, but I think looking at other lines of profession, like if you're I think a good example would be a doctor. If you're to be like taking, you know, declaring patients dead and using their organs for organ transplants to make money, like that's a taboo thing.
Good thing that's not extreme.
That's not extreme, but I'm saying, I mean, you know, try not to be extreme, but I'm saying like sports gambling is one of the big taboos.
Yeah.
In all of sports and all of one of the big taboo rules, if you break it, that's your fault. You should be punished for it.
Yeah, maybe it's just more so the fact that the verdict's already out, the decision has been made. So I don't know. It feels like a waste of time to talk about just on our side of things, but we know that there's going to be things that happen from it, and so we'll continue to provide any updates when we get them. But we'll take a break. We'll come back and quickly wrap up the show right after this.
You are on the line with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up the Wednesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. Appreciate everybody for being here with us. Had a really fun show here this afternoon. Yeah. It's been a fun couple of shows, even though, again, we're in the dog days of summer. We are in the epitome of talking season, and by no means just simply delaying our lists, but we want to, I guess, I don't want to say wait as long as we can, but we still have a lot lined up for before football season, but it needs to get a little bit closer to football season.
We got some stuff in the tank.
Yes, we very much do. Again, we have our Auburn football draft. We still have our SEC fantasy football type draft. We still have
deep dives for every player, team in the SEC, predictions and rankings of, like, okay, these, even if it's like conference previews outside of just the SEC, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Play, but, like, we're, so it's going to be, there's still so much you've got to tune into over the remainder of the summer as we inch closer to media days, as we have less than 2 weeks. I guess a week and a half now.
It is a wild thought that in 2 weeks we will be wrapping up day three of SEC media days. That's a crazy, crazy thought. But yes, all of that, we'll still have Heisman predictions. We'll still have college football playoff, our full playoff predictions, and so really, really excited for everything to come. But tomorrow's show, we got Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network joining us, Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, joining us. A little bit more of the hypothetical as the talking season rolls on, but looking forward to a really fun show tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Then you'll be making your appearance on Doug Amos and the Max Roundtable. That's usually about 11:20, so if y'all don't, it'll be on the same station, ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, or Radio Alabama app. Tune into that. It's always a good time with hearing Doug and Christian chat it up.
Yeah, we're back here from 2 to 4. He's Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Appreciate everybody for being here with us. And sports are so much better with an opinion, whether you love them, whether you hate them. We're back tomorrow to talk about them.